On the show today, we have LexisNexis Risk Solutions' very own Dan Wager talking about digital identity in financial crime. Super fascinating stuff here, so check it out. Hey, everybody. Mike Lawson here with CU Broadcast. Welcome to our show. And on today's program, we have Mr. Dan Wager from LexisNexis Risk Solutions. Wow. Say that three times fast, Dan. LexisNexis Risk Solutions. There you go. How are you?
Sounds good, sir. Yeah.
It is. But how are you doing, Dan?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me today, Mike. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Hey, we're talking about digital identity in financial crime. And so this is obviously top priority for just about any financial institution on planet Earth right now. So can you give us kind of an overview? Because there's something, you know, there's like financial crime compliance. Obviously, digital identity is percolating to the surface now. And so what's going on here? Can you give us a quick summary?
Absolutely. It's an area that I'm very passionate about, and that, you know, our company, LexisNexis Risk Solutions, and it is terrible to say it fast repeatedly, is focused on driving into this space amongst other providers. There's a broad amount of offerings in the market, but digital identity intelligence, as was encouraged by FinCEN and the federal regulatory agencies in their joint advisory in the fall of last year, actually, was meant to encourage entities to start looking at things beyond the normal names, attributes which banks typically look at and surface during financial crime investigations. The bottom line on it is that for years, under the mantle of financial crimes, fraud has been leveraging digital intelligence to identify fraud rings, to see when one digital entity, one device, one entity that's accessing from a common location or Wi-Fi or router, is running multiple accounts. They'll identify it as potential muling or fraud. They lock it down, they shut it down. Oddly, on the financial crime side, we've just been perseverating on the old stuff, names and rule thresholds for alerts and things like that. Oh, wow. The bottom line is criminals don't care about names. They don't care about addresses. They'll steal anyone's, they'll create them, they'll use them. But they leave a digital footprint that is incredibly leverageable to identify true risk.
Mm-hmm. And so what does this mean for a financial institution? Because obviously these folks they're looking for numbers. They want social security numbers. They want obviously bank account numbers, that type of stuff. And they want to, I guess, steal your identity as well to use it in various forms and stuff. Because I mean, I've heard that information is the new commodity, or this data is the new commodity, especially for fraudsters, because they can buy and sell it on the dark web and things like that. So what does it mean for a financial institution today?
So it's so if I could, I'm going to drive it along two lines. Sure. The line that you were discussing there is pretty heavily focused on cyber. And I think it's important that we stop drawing artificial lines that distinguish between cybercrime, fraud, and other financial crimes, such as sanctions, human trafficking, and the footprint that leaves. Kleptocracy, embezzlement, you know, a myriad other crimes that come into that space. As you've mentioned, people that are out there attempting to access sites or information, they're doing it to steal people's information. And that is an area where there's a lot of tools and a lot of offerings to help entities, banks, and financial institutions, credit unions of all types to identify risk for fraud. People trying to access your sites using stolen credentials. Accounts that have been compromised and putting the right digital controls around them. But again, what's really interesting is that there are a vast number of people out there who are using fabricated, borrowed, stolen, or turned over credentials, not for fraud, and not to defraud you or anyone else, but to commit the other crimes, such as sanctions evasion. So they may set up a whole series of accounts at an institution. And in fraud, they're quick to identify with the right tools that there is a single digital identity made up of collections of its device and location and the apps and everything, the behaviors of the device, that is accessing dozens of natural person accounts. It happens often at large institutions with student accounts and things like that. Okay. And they'll say, this is a real odd risk. And they'll place controls, maximum deposit rise, limits on credit. But and then they'll close the account. Or close the case. What the trouble there is that many times it's not a fraud happening at that instant institution. It's not going to happen there. It might be that someone else's institution is going to be compromised in a fraud and the proceeds laundered through yours in order to move overseas. So you won't see anything until a series of quick high volume wires go to high risk jurisdictions, and it may be too fast velocity to stop once it hits that point. That's the digital attributes that they leave behind when they step away from fraud.
Gotcha. And so how can a credit union in this case kind of leverage digital identity intelligence to identify this crime? How can they leverage that? Because it sounds like this is kind of our new normal now.
Right. Well, much like other financial institutions, credit unions have moved aggressively into the online account service and even opening space.
Mm-hmm.
So it's smart for them to use that digital interaction to collect intelligence, permission, okay. customer permissioned intelligence, where the customer through the interface provides hundreds of data points that give rise to a collective digital identity that's running that account. What they need to do is look for the right solutions in the market to say, is this my customer? And then, is this my customer doing things that I expect them to do?
Mm-hmm.
It's a combination of the creation of the account, the accessing of the account, and then the transactions and activities they commit. And they need to monitor it in an ongoing fashion, because if the person sets up and says, I am an employee of this business, and I work in New York State.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up in upstate New York, where IBM was the dominant force. So IBM Federal Credit Union was one of our principal banking outlets. My family's first construction loan, in fact, for our home to renovate our home was a credit union loan. So it's a model I really appreciate. But the problem is, if that person says, I'm going to do a refi or a renovation loan here, and I'm an employee of this business, they set up that way. But what happens when everything after that occurs through a VPN in a foreign jurisdiction?
Mm-hmm.
And they're not just tied to Dan Wager's accounts. They're tied to Mike's account and Bob's account and Jim's account. That's not normal. There's a risk there.
Yeah.
And instead of trolling around looking for risk indicators, these are risk indicators that can be in your face and acted upon immediately with the right controls. Mm-hmm.
No doubt. So how has the kind of the fast-paced shift toward digital markets and online customer interactions had a significant impact on financial crime compliance effectiveness?
Well, we see selected institutions beginning to leverage this. As I mentioned, many places have been leveraging digital identity intelligence for fraud for years,
mm-hmm.
but it often stopped there. Well, here's an interesting idea, and I think this is very, very relevant for the credit union space in particular, because they've moved aggressively into the global corporate and correspondent banking spaces. And this has caused some pain. It's caused mm-hmm. some attention from FinCEN in prior years.
Oh, yeah.
Some are doing it well, and some are struggling. But as you get into that global space, this is where leveraging that digital identity intelligence can give you an indication that something has gone amiss right from the start. And let me go back to the fraud example. Fraud will detect when someone appears to be using multiple accounts or is doing it in a way that is troublesome and indicates maybe the credentials are stolen, places them into a step-up activity. On the financial crime side, there's still this artificial silo where entities are not leveraging those same tools to say, what is this evidence for financial crime?
Mm-hmm.
And the opportunity there is to get a grip on risk, to your question, your original question, in a highly effective way, meaning you identify true risk quickly using automation and analytics and digital attributes instead of a person trolling through transactions and looking at alerts and doing requests for information. It is a speedy, accurate way to identify risk.
So what is the, I think we both know the answer here, but I want to get your take on it, because you live this day in and day out, the significance of this right now for credit unions and even banks too. I mean, just financial, the significance of it. I mean, and trickling down to members or consumers, what's the significance of all of this today?
I think the significance is that it presents an opportunity, an industry right now that is focused heavily on, and then a regulatory environment that's focused heavily on old controls like name screening, which as a company, we do a lot in. But name screening has to get smarter. To get better, because the actual risk mitigation from name screening is incredibly small. It's minimal,
mm-hmm.
despite
mm-hmm.
tremendous effort. On the digital side, again, you have an opportunity to say, here is true risk, and to act upon it with far fewer assets, far less spend, and therefore address more risk. So the opportunity here is to demonstrate the value of this information. Use it accurately to provide high-quality reporting through SARs or contacts with government.
Mm-hmm.
Show that it's a better control, and then say, let's do the right kind of addressing of risk with the traditional methods, mm-hmm. but let's really dive into spaces where we're identifying more risk with less effort and protecting our system and our institutions. Yeah, that's the opportunity.
Yeah, I hear you loud and clear for that. All right, 2020, what's the outlook? I don't want to say, what do we get to look forward to, or what do we need to be aware of, rather? What do we need to look out for in this regard, especially the credit union folks?
Yeah, I think one thing to look out for is that there is a slow development of regulatory awareness of the value of digital attributes. So for regulated entities, for credit unions, for your regulators, you need to look, and actually it's you and your CUSOs if you use them, mm-hmm. but for all financial institutions in general, they need to be aware that regulators are becoming more aware of this. So they may come to you and say, what digital intelligence is available to you that you are not leveraging? Meaning, if you knew that the same device, and device is just the most minimalist of digital identity intelligence attributes,
yeah.
it's the most basic. If you knew that this device accessed this account, and you've already said this account has significant risk, did you even check to see if that device has accessed other accounts or controls other accounts, either individual or corporate, in your book? That's the kind of thing you can expect from regulators in the next year as they become more aware of this. That's just the tip of the iceberg. Now, the opportunity for 2020 is that there are tools available, and there are things which you don't even need tools for. Like I just described, have you taken a dive into your data sets to say, when we've identified accounts that are troublesome, mm-hmm. the digital attributes they leave behind, mm-hmm. the emails they use, the places they're coming from, everything that comes through in a message format, whether you're using a solution or not, how are you using those? Let's test it and let's see what lift it brings. Then you find the right solutions. It's a chance to really, truly identify risk, protect an institution, and do it at a far less cost and human capital burden.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. And it sounds like it's just a question of education. It's just being aware of this stuff and knowing what's going on out there. Like you said, I mean, this is something so simple. It could be right in front of your face and you don't need these fancy tools to find something like that. So, oh my gosh, this stuff.
It's a fun space. Job.
What's that?
Yeah. It's a great space. I'm very enthusiastic about it. I mean, the irony of it is, Mike, right now, almost every institution in the U.S. and the world would easily answer the question of a regulator, which says, if someone tried to log in and access your banking services from Cuba or Iran, what would you do? And they could all, almost without an exception, truthfully say, we would turn them away. But the next question of, okay, if they came at you from a VPN, right, that was emanating from Denmark or the UK, 5 minutes later, do you have a control to stop them? Almost everyone would be dumbstruck at that point.
Wow.
They'd be unable to answer that truthfully because, to be honest, despite the fact that person has not moved and the VPN, that use of that creates risk, there's no control for it. Meanwhile, we have enormous numbers of people still looking at names and trolling through documents around transactions, and this risk is right in your face.
It's right there. Oh my gosh. Dan, your job must be like an adventure every day because, I mean, it's something different all the time. So, because it's changing so fast, I can imagine.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Yeah, it can be fun.
All right, Dan. Well, so I'm going to let you get back to work.
All right.
So,
absolutely. Well, thanks for having me, Tim. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. I was going to say, if you had any final words of wisdom on this topic to kind of leave us with that we can kind of look out for in 2020.
Yeah, the challenge is for institutions of all sizes, but particularly those in the credit union space, where no institution has unlimited compliance resources, but as you get to smaller institutions, it can become even more compressed. The trick here is to get your nose up from the wheel in your program long enough to say, where are ways that we can address risk in an innovative way? Mm-hmm. And that's hard. It's a tall ask because meanwhile, the regulatory pressure and the enforcement pressure is to keep your nose on the wheel in the ways we've always done things. So that's the challenge for next year. Get your head up long enough to say, what else can we find? And start using that to better protect your institutions.
Indeed. Great message to end on. Dan, thank you so much. Appreciate the time and keep up the good work because we need folks out. We need folks like you out there helping out. So appreciate it.
Thank you, Mike. I appreciate having you too. Thanks.
Anytime. Look forward to having you back on too. This is really good stuff.